Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 48 degrees under a high overcast. Today's Wednesday, September 5th, 2012. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. A Sitka grand jury has added a third charge to the man suspected of breaking into the Baranoff Island Brewing Company. Sitka police charged 22-year-old Carl M. Liberty with second-degree theft and burglary. The grand jury agreed when it met on Friday and handed up indictments on those two counts, but it also added a third, tampering with evidence. Liberty is accused in a June 2nd burglary at the Sitka Brewery. Police say he stole more than $900 in cash and several bottles of beer. Police recorded a phone call between Liberty and his sister, during which they say Liberty admitted to burning the backpack and hat he wore the night of the burglary. Tampering with evidence, second-degree theft, and second-degree burglary are all Class C felonies. Each can bring up to 5 years in jail and a $50,000 fine. Raven News is profiling the candidates for municipal office this month. This week, we're talking to the three people running for mayor. Mim McConnell has been on the Assembly since 2009. She spoke with KCAW's Ed Ronco.
Mim McConnell arrived in Alaska in 1975, aboard the state ferry Columbia. In the time since, she's lived in Juneau, Port Alexander, and as of 1998, Sitka.
My husband and I, Mike McConnell, we were living in Auk Bay on our boat, and there were some other friends living there, and we were all talking about where to go next. And everyone was saying, well, Sitka has really good mortgage rates.
Those rates are going up. The Sitka Assembly voted at its last meeting to raise them for 1 year. McConnell, who now lives on land and has been on the Assembly since 2009, was the only vote against the increase. She said she wanted the issue decided once fishermen were back in from the summer season. It speaks to something McConnell considers one of her strengths.
Well, I like to bring people together. I like to mediate. I like to build consensus.
And she says that would be one of her hallmarks if she were elected mayor, making sure various voices are heard on contentious city issues.
There is no one person that has all the answers. The answers come from people working together and just feeding off of each other's energy and hearing other ideas and brainstorming. And boy, before you know it, you've got a new idea that you never would have thought of on your own. And so there's... Mim McConnell can't come up with all the answers, but I know how to bring people together, and I know how to listen to people, and I know that we will find the answers together.
McConnell says she's running for mayor because she believes she has leadership skills that can help, and that it is not intended as a referendum on Mayor Cheryl Westover.
You know, it's been a positive experience overall. Obviously, I haven't agreed with everything, every decision she's made. I wouldn't expect that of anybody. But I just think that what I have to offer is different and is something that's needed in our community this time.
She says she'd also like to improve Sitka's government-to-government relationships. City Hall regularly interacts with federal agencies, the Sitka Tribe of Alaska, and state government. McConnell says she would like to forge stronger partnerships.
I would like to see the city doing more to support the Forest Service in our community. You know, they've lost a lot of staff, a lot of funding. And I would like to see that change. I think that the Forest Service is a really important form of government in Sitka.
One intergovernment relationship that has experienced some tension lately is with the school board during conversations about the school district's budget.
I wouldn't say that the relationship is in trouble, but it might be fragile.
During one meeting, then-Assemblymember Terry Blake accused Superintendent Steve Bradshaw of yelling at him. Bradshaw apologized and said he just tends to speak loudly. During another, the school board and an assembly member took exception to Mayor Cheryl Westover's suggestion that schools should be run like a business. McConnell says a lot of that tension could be avoided, especially if the assembly can figure out a way to let the district know earlier how much money it will receive from the city.
One way of the assembly doing that is recognizing the importance of education in our community and funding it to as greatest extent as possible.
McConnell also says she'd like to see Sitka's tourism sector grow. That includes branding efforts to better sell the community's attributes to potential visitors. But she also says it includes making Sitka more appealing year-round.
I would really like to see more happening during the winter months. It would be I think that that would help diversify our economy, and that's where we gain our strength, is that diversification. That if you have that in a community, you're going to have a pretty healthy community, because if one segment of that economy struggles, is having a bad time, then you have all the other ones that kind of help carry the community through.
She uses fishing as an example.
You know, when fishing has a down year, it doesn't completely ruin the community. The community survives and it's resilient. It bounces back. If we have more things going on here in the wintertime, that's going to help spread out the tourist or visitor industry in town and strengthen it. That's going to make it more resilient.
McConnell's name is on the ballot for mayor, along with Cheryl Westover and Tor Christensen. The municipal election is set for October 2nd. This is Ed Ronco in Sitka.
You can hear this story again and yesterday's profile of Mayor Cheryl Westover on our website, kcaw.org. Tomorrow, we'll bring you a profile of mayoral candidate Tor Christensen. Next week, we'll start airing our stories on the assembly candidates, and you'll get to ask your questions to all of them if you so choose. We've scheduled live call-in forums with the candidates for the week of September 17th. This time, it's the story of the buoy that didn't get away. The U.S. Coast Guard cutter Maple retrieved the Cape Edgecombe weather buoy last week after the errant instrument spent 6 days adrift in the Gulf of Alaska. The buoy was only about 10 miles off station, dutifully transmitting weather and ocean conditions as it slowly cruised north and west in the balmiest seas of the summer. Last time the Cape Edgecombe buoy broke loose in winter, it drifted 400 miles before anyone caught it. Lieutenant Ray Reichel is the executive officer of the Sitka-based cutter Maple. As these things go, picking up the buoy was a breeze, if that.
When we were able to get up on scene, seas were less than 1 foot. We didn't have any registered winds at the time, and we were able to safely get up alongside of it and bring it aboard without damaging any of the sensors.
The Cape Edgecombe buoy is 6 meters long, or around 18 feet. It's really more like a small boat than a traditional navigational can or nun. And like Reichel says, it's fairly bristling with equipment. The Maple brought the buoy back to Sitka. Resetting it where it broke off was impossible at the time. Reichel says it requires about a mile and a half of specialized mooring gear and a 6-ton concrete anchor.
It had about 7,000 feet of line. It was made up of multiple segments, and it was broken on the third segment. So we recovered just about half of the line, and it had just parted somewhere in the middle of that section. So we're not sure if it had gotten fouled up on something or if it had just gotten, it was a weak spot in the line itself, but it wasn't at one of the connection points, and it wasn't at the sinker itself. So the sinker itself is still there with part of the mooring, so we'll need to bring out a whole new mooring system and reset that one. But I believe it'll probably be around a 12,000-pound sinker that they'll use for that one again.
The failed mooring dates from 2008, when the buoy broke loose in a fierce winter storm and began a 400-mile odyssey across the Gulf, first swinging north into Yakutat Bay and then heading west to Cape St. Elias, where it eventually beached near Kayak Island. The National Data Buoy Center recovered 84, as it's called in officialdom, refurbished it, and put it back into the rotation with the three other weather buoys stationed offshore between Dixon Entrance and Cape Suckling. 84 has continued to be the NDBC's problem child. It's been replaced twice since it got away in 2008. Once in 2011, and then again just this past June, after its predecessor had spent nearly a year failing. Just as the Cape Edgecombe buoy is too expensive and sophisticated an instrument to let it go wandering, it's also too important to mariners and weather forecasters to let it sit on the dock for long. Lieutenant Reichel says the NDBC is shipping up a new mooring and equipment to allow the Maple to attempt to reset the 84 buoy, and to repair another buoy, 85, or the Central Gulf buoy, this October. Conditions offshore in October are typically a lot different than in August. If they get an opening, Reichel thinks the crew of the Maple can do the job.
Weather conditions are typically best at 6 foot or less to be able to safely get that over, because, again, we don't want to damage any of the sensors in the process of setting up the moorings. So it'll be one that will definitely be having a lot less safe weather windows to do it, but there'll still be some available in that time frame of the year.
In the meantime, the Cape Edgecombe buoy continues to perform perfectly. Reichel says its battery of instruments is functioning, relaying weather and sea height from its very solid perch on the Coast Guard pier. The National Data Buoy Center has stopped updating the buoy's public website, however, to prevent someone from mistaking conditions on dry land in a sheltered harbor for autumn 45 miles offshore in the Gulf of Alaska.
To see a picture of the Cape Edgecombe weather buoy high and dry on the Coast Guard pier in Sitka, visit our website, kcaw.org. Divers in Southeast's three largest cities are seeing more flashing lights. That would be drivers in Southeast's three largest cities. It's not an optical illusion. Department of Transportation spokesman Jeremy Woodrow says they're being added to traffic signals to show when left turns are safe.
The new, I guess, fourth signal that you'll now see is a flashing yellow arrow. And this means you must yield to oncoming traffic and pedestrians as well before you can then proceed across the lane of traffic.
Juneau got the first flashing yellow signal about 3 years ago. The department is adding eight more to key capital city intersections. Two are being installed in Ketchikan and one in Sitka. Overall, about 50 have been or will be installed around the state.
Studies have shown and statistics have shown nationwide that drivers are more likely, when they come to an intersection where they have the flashing yellow arrow, they're more likely to yield in this case instead of then proceeding across a lane of traffic.
Woodrow says not all traffic signals need the flashing yellow lights. The one in Sitka will be added to the traffic signal at Halibut Point Road and Catlan Street. And if you're not clear on how they work, we've posted a link to an animated illustration. It's with this story online at kcaw.org. Zone weather forecast today for Sitka and Port Alexander calls for rain developing this afternoon, highs around 58, south winds 5 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, highs around 56, west winds 10 miles per hour. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka.